paper this morning to start with and turn it over the back, the blank side. I would like for to get some time frames into mind to start with this morning. If we go back to the beginning of the United Kingdom, Saul, what's the date of Saul's beginning of his reign? 1040. Okay. So the United Kingdom starts up here at 1040 BC. Saul reigned for 40 years, so we got 1000, the beginning of David. Reigned for 40 years, so 960 will begin Solomon. He reigned for 40 years, gets us down to 920 about. So 920 would mark the beginning of the divided kingdom, okay? When did Israel fall to Assyria? 721. So we got about 200 years here that the divided kingdom lasted before we get to Judah alone. Where are we now in our study? We're somewhere over here in this 850 to 840 time frame. Okay. We'll give you a little perspective kind of where we are. So we're about 80 years or so, 70, 80 years into it, and about 120 or 130 years left. I do all that because as we go through the class this morning, we're going to have some dates when various things happen. It's going to kind of apply to your timeline there. I think it'll help you out a little bit. Okay. In a minute, we're going to be in 2 Kings chapter 10 and 11. Flip over for just a minute to chapter 17. So we're going over six chapters, and look at, I would read verse 5. A second. All right, what's happening here? This is the beginning of the what? This right here. This is what is fixed to happen. Six chapters open. This is what I'm getting to. So this time's going to kind of fly through here in the rest of here a little bit there. Well, this 721 is going to happen over here. So anyhow, this perspective things to get in mind here to start through the class this morning a little bit. Okay. We're going to talk this morning some of first about the Assyrian Empire, because the Assyrian Empire is now beginning to have a major impact on the world, the known world, but now it's just really affect Israel and Judah. So we're going to spend some time looking at the Assyrian Empire. So, and I think they had a date on it, maybe it does, but the peak of their power, this is what the Assyrian Empire covered. So look at the map here, just say they, from Egypt, all this area was covered by, under a control of the Assyrian Empire. So here's where we are. Here's Israel and Judah. Here's Judah particularly down here. This one is the north of it. And Nineveh, way up yonder to the top side up there somewhere. So, long ways away. And yet we're going to find a lot about these folks this morning. So, of course, number one on the paper there is about the Assyrian Empire. Get started off here. So, its capital is Nineveh, a city that's not unknown to us from the Bible. And it's located along the Tigris River up here. Get the Tigris and Euphrates together. Euphrates being the longest on the bottom, Tigris on top. And then it was along the Tigris River. So the capital of the Assyrian Empire. Way, way, way away from this little piece of real estate over here. All right. So this is, and I don't know how to do this, so just read this to you. But I'm going to try to do it in a way that you can to hear what it said and listen and comprehend some of the points made here. But it's just introduction to the Assyrian Empire. It says, from their origins in a few major cities on the Tigris River in northern Iraq, Nineveh, Ashur, and we got some words I don't know if I can pronounce this morning. Max can help you come in here. Kalaka. The Assyrians grew by the 9th century. All right, think about our time now. When's the 9th century BC going to be? We're back in this area over here. Okay. 9th century BC to control most of the Middle East, from Egypt to the Persian Gulf, almost uniformly illiterate, which is not uncommon at that time, the Assyrians regarded warfare as their most important activity. Listen. And considered it a divinely inspired goal to impose their gods upon the conquered territories. So all this war they were doing was for the purpose of spreading their religion, more or less. Imposing their gods upon the other people. They were the first major power to equip soldiers with iron weapons, to master the tactics of light horse-drawn chariots. And this, combined with the superb military organization, turned them into the most successful fighting power the ancient world had yet seen. At its height, the Assyrian army numbered in the hundreds of thousands. And its thunder of its chariotry, boy, you can tell I copied that. That's a word you use every day, right? Inspired fear in all who heard it. Okay. But you can imagine hundreds of chariots coming at you, and the noise as they came across the land. Think about in our more modern times, the tanks, the war tanks coming across, the officials of the world, Second World War. So, this is, kind of get this in mind, what kind of people these are, these Assyrians. The Assyrian strategy for conquest depended heavily upon psychological warfare. They would first send their cupbearers, the representatives of the king, to try to persuade a city to surrender without a fight. If this failed, the Assyrian army would then surround the city and shout at its defenders, trying to convince them that resistance was useless. Woe to the people who still refused to capitulate. For if forced to fight, the Assyrians would then bring out their giant wheeled siege towers, enormous armored battering rams to breach the city walls. Well, we're going to try to get you to surrender first, every way you will, based on our reputation. We'll send ambassadors to you and say, you might as well give it up. If that don't work, we're going to surround the cities. We're going to just yell at you and tell you, give it up. If you don't do it, woe unto you. We gave you a chance. This is an inscription on this. We're going to talk about this stone this thing is on a little later on. But look at this. This is this quote here from this one of these kings. I am powerful. I am omnipotent. I'm a hero. I'm gigantic. I'm colossal. He thought long himself, didn't he, Bill? Okay. But that's the approach that these folks went out with. They went into battle, and apparently they had something to make it work. Okay, where are we here? All right, 934. Go back over here. Where are we? We're back in Solomon's time. 934. Okay. Ashurdan II established a Neo-Assyrian empire. The empire unifies the Middle East from Egypt to the Caspian Sea under one rule, and by so doing lays the foundation for the subsequent rise of the Persians, Hellenism, Greeks, Christianity, and Islam. Great advances in, by the way, we're down to number 3 on your paper over here. The word describes the military behavior. What's back on those other slides? No, it's right here on this one. Barbaric. And we'll get there in a minute. We're ready to slide down here. Barbaric. And then for the contributions they made, here it is on this slide here. Great advances in science, technology, philosophy, medicine, and government are made. The Assyrian conquest spread civilization to formerly savage lands. The aspect of the Neo-Assyrian Empire is often overshadowed by scholars' baffling preoccupation with the Assyrian military machine and its so-called barbaric behavior. When the historians look at it, that's what they see, it's barbaric approach. They don't see all this other stuff they contributed to over here and all the things they did here. This is what overshadows everything else. I don't know if it's in this stuff here or not, or somewhere else I read them. Take them and just, if the people wouldn't surrender, they'd go and get them and impale the people up on spears, just hang them on walls, on the post, just drive them up there, just body slam them up there and right through them, just have them hang there. Very, very barbaric. Okay. The Syrians never conquered. Now keep this in mind, think about this right here now. Think about this captivity coming up here. The Syrians never conquered and destroyed. They conquered and civilized, teaching their subjects the art of the highest civilization then in existence. The cultural unification of the Middle East is a subtle point to grasp. Yet it must be understood that this was the greatest achievement of the Assyrians. Other achievements in that period are too numerous to list fully. Some examples are paved roads, the postal system, magnifying glass, electric battery, plumbing with a flush toilet. Everybody appreciate that. The first use of iron, the first chariots, the first aqueduct, which still was in existence up to about 15 years ago, the first library, and the first system of musical notation. So although all people look at them and see their barbaric military behavior, they actually contribute a lot of other things to it as we go along here. Quite a group. So how's it fit in time-wise? Here we are. We're down here. We've finished up. Here's Ahab, Ahaziah, Jehoram. We're in time of Jehu now. So we're right in this time frame here. Well, here we talked about Asa, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, Ahaziah, Athaliah, when he died, coming in. We're talking about Joash today. So we're right in this time frame right in here. So you see how that fits in with the. We don't see the Assyrians coming in that much into the biblical story yet, because we think about them coming in in 721 when they conquered Israel. But actually, they're at influx now. We think see some battle today because of them. So they already could be a world power, even back in this far back in here. Okay, how do they tie in with Israel? This is the next one here. All right, we jump ahead. See these cities up here? Hamath and Arvard. Everybody say up there. All right, get this map in mind. Familiar with this? Dead Sea, still Galilee. All right, Damascus is way up here at the top. Capital of Syria. All right, take that Damascus, and here it is right here. So now we're going further north. And here's these cities it's talking about. That this being this coalition here. Alright. Let's back up now and read this part here. Okay. In 853, a coalition. 853. So we're talking about right in here where we are now. You see why in a minute. Coalition was formed by the kingdoms of Egypt, Hamath, Arvard, the Ammonites, and Ahab of Israel, and other neighboring states, under the leadership of King Hadadezer of Damascus, defeated the Syrian king at the Battle of Qar. However, the Syrian king preserved his attempts to subjugate Israel and Syria. Other battles followed in 849 and 846. All this time we're talking about here. About where we are with our study now. Okay. And then you see Jehu into it. 842, Shalmaneser campaigned against Hadadezer's successor, Hazael. Hazael, we already talked about him being king of Syria. Forced him to take refuge in the walls of his capital. We'll get that story this morning. That's the biblical story we're going to talk about this morning. While Shalmaneser was unable to capture Damascus, he devastated his territory, and Jehu of Israel, whose ambassadors are represented on this stone called this black obelisk. We're going to see that this morning in our study. Now the British Museum. So Jehu is shown on this stone. There's inscriptions on this stone of him actually bowing and giving submission to Shalmaneser. This is the Syrian king over here. So my point here all this time is that very much involvement they're getting into with the kingdom of Israel here already at this point. Okay. Hope that wasn't too awfully dry and boring. Kind of get the groundwork laid there. Talk about these. Okay, Shalmaneser. Let's see where we are on the sheets over here. Number two, military behavior is very barbaric. Number three, their positive contributions, advances in science, technology, medicine, they mentioned paved roads, postal systems, magnifying glass, and all that list of things we had over there earlier. Rather than conquer and destroy, what was the Assyrian practice? They conquered and civilized. Take them off the teaching of their things there. How do we see this later in biblical history? Of course, I'm referring there to 721 when they captured Israel, took them off, and there. All right, so now we're down to number five, and let's talk about Shalmaneser here a little bit. So now we can pick back up in 2 Kings chapter 10, starting in about verse 32 here in a minute. That's where we're going to be headed next, so not quite there yet. All right, got a time frame. Shalmaneser III, 859 to 824 B.C. So right in the very time frame we're talking about now. Look at this thing here. 853, days of Ahab, they attempted to invade Canaan, that's what we just read about from the historical side over there. Turned away by a coalition of these kings of Hamath, Syria, and Ahab in Israel. Unable to conquer them at that time. Now Hazael becomes king of Syria. Became king in 842. So here we are. And Shalmaneser now is king of Assyria. This is just before Jehu became king of Israel. So I'm going to back up here just a minute and find this little slide up here. Right here. So right in this time frame here. Talking about. Okay. Okay. Shalmaneser attacks Damascus in 841. That's what we just read about on the historic side over there a minute ago. Hazael had no help. Hazael's king of Syria. Had no help. But Shalmaneser could not take the heavily fortified city. It came in, put a siege around it, devastated the territory we read about earlier. All around the Syrian territory, all around Damascus. But could not take the city. So Hazael survives as king of Syria when this Syrian army comes in. So now, let's jump to Jehu and talk about him a little bit. So, number 5 on your paper there, Shalmaneser the III attempts to invade Israel, turned him away, this coalition, Hamath, Ben-Hadad of Syria, and Ahab, king of Israel. Shalmaneser III is king in Syria, Hazael's king in Syria, and Jehu is about to be king of Israel. Number 7, he had conquered him, that's what we just talked about on the previous slide there. Number 7 is that stuff here. Try to get in there and take him. Okay. Now, Jehu. Alright. Number 8. Free from attacks by Syria, because Syria now can't take them. They back off. Let Syria alone. Assyria backs off and lets Syria alone. So Hazael needs something to do. Yep. So he's going to go out and start doing his own attacking now. He's preserved himself from this Shalmaneser the III coming in. So he's going to go out and do this. So, now, tie the historical side to God's providence and God's control. Look at 2 Kings 10, verse 32. What happened then? Who's in control here?
God.
God is. In that day, what? The Lord began to cut off Israel, okay? And chop off its pieces of its territory, whatever. Now, Hazael's going to do it, okay? But God's caused this thing to happen here. So, that's in 10:32. So, Jehu, let's see. All right, Jehu submits himself to Shalmaneser. We talked about that on the stone a while ago. This monument, this black obelisk, is inscribed with this statement right here. The tribute of Jehu, the son of who? Why? Was he? No. That whole dynasty had been cut off back over there. So what's it tied back to, perhaps? Wickedness? Ruthlessness? He was known to be that same type of person as Omri. Apparently, Omri had quite a reputation. You go back and look at it. Had quite a reputation for his ruthless evilness. Evil. And Jehu's fallen in that same pattern. So these Assyrians, when they inscribed this stone, that's how they recognized it. As a son of Omri, because of the way you walked in his way so much. Okay. Shalmaneser tried again in 837. A little bit past us over here. No more threats, 25 years. So Hazael turned his attention to Israel. Now, here's the verse that's talked about. Those days the Lord began to cut off parts of Israel. Now, pay attention to that word right here. Cut off parts of Israel. Hazael conquered them in the territory of Israel. Look at this verse right here. This is astounding right here. Verse 33. What's verse 33 say? What's happened when they first came in under Moses, came up the east side of the Jordan, and conquered the territories over there? When you start talking about land distribution, who was on the east side of Jordan? Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh. Okay? Well, the east side, for a long, long, long time back. What's verse 33 say? Gone. Okay? That territory on the east side of Jordan. The land of Gilead. All that land over there is known as Gilead. Gad, Reuben, and even names them. Okay? Then cut off. No more part of Israel. Brought down here to nothing. Now, flip back to chapter 8 a minute. 2 Kings chapter 8. We talked about this maybe it was last Sunday. story that begins in verse 7. Ben-Hadad, remember the story? Ben-Hadad is sick.
What's he do?
Sends Hazael to Elisha. Ask him what? Is Ben-Hadad going to get well? Right? And what does Elisha start doing? Well, first his answer is, yes, he's going to get well, but what? He's going to die. Okay. But why? Unless Elisha starts weeping. Why? Because of what Hazael is going to do to Israel. Okay? Okay? Who is fixing to do all this stuff right here? Back to chapter 10. And it starts with, and the one who's cutting him off now, the one who's starting attacking Israel, is Hazael of Syria. Because what's happened to him? He's turned away Shalmaneser from Assyria to come and attack him. So this very thing here that Elisha said you're fixed to do, that's making me sad, because Elisha was from Syria. I mean, was from Samaria, Damascus. Samaria, the capital of Israel. Get right in there, sorry. It's happening now. So, look here. It's about 70 miles, roughly, from the top of the Dead Sea to the bottom of the Sea of Galilee. 70 miles. So if you look at this, you're talking about what? 50 miles by... So think about Morgan County and Limestone County. What's that? 50 miles? Roughly? Maybe? Something like that? And width? I mean, this kingdom, quote, quote, we're talking about here, is the size of Limestone and Morgan County. That's what it's shrunk down to. I wish I had a map up here of Solomon's day, the kingdom in Solomon's time, and what it's now come down to. All this over here is gone. And it squashed down to here. So this is what's left now of the kingdom of Israel. These attacks that have come into it. Got attention mainly on Israel today, not so much Judah down here.
Okay.
So that's question number 9. Drinking down the. So let's move on now with Jehu. Jehu dies, and his son Jehoahaz is going to be king. Buried in Samaria, reigned 28 years, and now his son Jehoahaz is going to be king. Following Jehu. Now, we're going to shift from there to Judah now. We've been talking about Israel all this time. All this affair has been affecting them. Now we're going to shift down and get Joash down in Israel. So, who has been reigning in Israel and Judah this time? Athaliah. Okay, Athaliah. Now, here's a background on this one. Athaliah is the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, the mother of Ahaziah, who was king in Judah that year. And he died. And what has she done? Killed all the other heirs. Okay, so nobody's left after Ahaziah died, except one, Joash, son of Ahaziah. Was hid. The infant son was hid and was not killed. They hid him in the house of the Lord for 6 years. 6 years. So you have Ahaziah. Athaliah comes in during this time, this period here between time Ahaziah dies until Joash be brought out today. So Athaliah is reigning in there during that time frame. Okay, so we're getting to Joash now. I think I'm getting behind on my slides here. All right. So now we're down to Joash. A little background on him. That's question number 11 on the paper there. He was the son of Ahaziah, who was hid when Athaliah killed all the other heirs. Hid for 6 years in the house of the Lord. Okay, Joash. All right, question number 12. Who's Jehoiada? Jehoiada at this time is the high priest. Okay? He's the one that's going to bring Joash out. He's going to be the key figure here in Joash's life. So how does he do this thing? He comes in and he takes, and this is in 2 Chronicles, our passage there, as well as in 2 Kings. So he comes in and takes, we're starting about in verse, where are we now? Hang on a minute, sorry. Verse 4. Seventh year of Jehoiada. Seventh year of Joash's age. He's 7 years old now. They go to this transition age. It's time to bring out Joash and make him king. So here's what he does. He gets the captains of the guard come together. Not the, apparently not the men, but just the captains. Sworn to secrecy. Got this plan. Athaliah's the queen ruler in Judah. This plan. The guard changes on the Sabbath. There's two groups of guards going off duty. It's okay, captains, I want you to keep those two on duty. When they go off, they're going to remain. Then the guards coming on at that same time will also be there. So you got a double force of the guards. Plus he sends word out through all the land for the priests and the Levites to come in and things like this. So he gets them all together. Got this grand plan here of how this is going to all take place. He's going to bring Joash out and make him king. So he does this on the Sabbath at the time of the guard change. Two groups of guards going off duty, but remain at the temple and guard it. So those coming on duty now, he divides them into three parts. But a third of them would be at the king's house. A third at one gate and a third at the other gate over here, behind the escorts. So I guess everybody split out. Everybody in position. He's going to stop. He got the gates covered, so he stopped those coming in and out. He's going to have those guarding Joash around him. You'll see that in a minute. And he's going to have the king's house, where Athaliah would be, cut off so she can't get out and cause any trouble here. So they're going to surround the king on every side with weapons in their hands. Anybody gets too close to Joash, kill him. Now, as they came in, they didn't want to rouse suspicion but have them all have the weapons with them. So they all come in place first, and then he gives them the weapons out of the temple. These are the weapons that belong to David. So Jehoiada gets this whole thing planned out, I mean, down to the letter here, as best we can tell. So that's number 13 there. It's his plan to keep those on duty. The guard changes occurs there. And so, where I get to? Now everyone's in place. Jehoiada gives them weapons from the temple arsenal. Joash is brought out, 7 years old, 8 years old. Been head there for 6 years. He's brought out and he crowned a king. He's given a copy of the law. That's part of being king. The king was to maintain a copy of the law. You go back to Deuteronomy and you read about that. To have a copy of the law. He was given a copy of the law, the testament it's called, I think, in one passage I read there. And then people start shouting, long live the king. Long live the king. Imagine this little old Lee. Eight? Okay. That's about right. It's 8 year old. He'll be king. And he's standing up against one of the pillars. That was, again, apparently part of the tradition or whatever went with it. I mean, if you read that and read some of the history stuff over there. Sitting against one of the pillars. As they gave him a copy of the law and started yelling at this little 8-year-old, long live the king. So Jehoiada's plan has been played out exactly and it's worked apparently to a T. So Joash is now brought out to be king. Now, though I don't like it, Athaliah hears all the noise going on because of this ceremony, whatever's going on here. And she said, there'll be something going on. So she comes out and see what it is. You're the queen mother. And people start yelling, long live the king. Does that make you think about my tie's a little tight today, right? Something's going to happen here. So she hollers, treason. Because they're overthrowing her rule. And Jehoiada gives command to take her away. Apparently his influence was apparently quite heavy if you look at this whole thing here. And he's going to have, if we get into the next part here, have a major influence on Joash's life, as we know. And not only kill her, but anyone who seems to want to side with her, be on her side, take up for her, follow her, whatever, is also to be killed. Okay. Alright, so here we are, timeline wise. Asa, good king, Jehoshaphat, Jehoram, Ahaziah, 1 year, Athaliah, at this time in here, Thought she had killed all the heirs. This one crossed back up now. So now we're in 837 to 800 time. We're 837 now. We make king. So we're sitting right in here. A little time right over here now somewhere. Approaching halfway through this divided kingdom time. But Jehovah asked the king here, over here, Jehu reigns down. 837, he would still be reigning in this time frame here. So we got Jehu over here and Joash on the other side. Okay, I've done all the talking this morning. All of it. I don't like it that way. So you just have more questions than do this through all this crazy stuff. Yes. Yes. Glad you brought that out. I remember reading that, but did not bring it out. Yes. Sure was. Yes, sir.
Also,
yeah. Yeah. Okay, we got about 5 minutes left. So I've talked for 40 minutes, 35, y'all got to talk for five now.
She shall speak the truth, and as if she could call it for justice.
Yeah. Like, how did she get to where she was, right? Yeah. I just killed everybody else off, so I'd be queen. Now, don't y'all do this to me over here. Okay, yeah.
Probably she's a grandkid.
Yeah, let me go ahead. Think about that. Who is? I like my other charts up here better. I got the arrows pointing for you over there. Who is this Ahaziah here? Who's he married to? Over here you got Ahab, son Ahaziah, and son Jehoram. They had a daughter. I mean, Ahab had a daughter named what? Athaliah. Okay. And she married Jehoram. I'm sorry. Okay, Jehoram. Then their son is Ahaziah. I love one line up here. Okay, Jehoram. So who is Joash in this line here? Who was she killed when she killed all these children here? But Ahaziah's son would have been Ahaziah's sons that she killed here. Ahaziah's son that she killed would have been what to Athaliah? Grandchildren. Okay, is that right? Yeah. So she killed her own grandchildren. So she could be a ruler.
The province is that in her attempt to wipe out all of the heirs, she also wiped out her Ahab and everybody above her evil influence.
Yep.
Because she was in hiding. The first king of Wallach does not have gotten that evil influence they have.
Yep. And what if she had wiped out Joash here? What happened to the Davidic line then? Gone. He's the one that's left to preserve the line of David coming down through here. So there's more to it than her just not wiping him out. That's the providence of God tied into that too. So that line would have been gone. I told you back the first of the class, it's going to get complicated when we get this time frame right in here. And it does. We call it people crossing back and forth and the common names between the two. Quite clouded down here. There's no record of anybody being killed trying to follow her, right? Back on that slide up here. Where it says, killed anyone that follows her? I don't remember reading about anybody being killed besides her. Yeah. Yeah. And they seized her and went by the way of the horses' entrance to the king's house, and she was killed there. They got her out before the horses come into the city. Away from everything else. Yeah, oh yeah. He didn't want anything like that going on around there. Yeah, that's right. But the two passages in 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, that's very clear. Get her away from here. Right. Yep. Okay, anything else? I told Shirley when I started, I did all this prep work back before the court ever started. I go back through it now and try to get my feeble brain to talk about it. I told her yesterday, this is my Friday night, I guess it was, this is going to be a messy one. Because they just got all this Assyrian stuff in here, and then these battles that go on, and then this coming into it, and these different people interplaying with one another here from one side to the other. It's just a little complicated little thing. For those of you who are teaching second and third graders, next time I feel for you. So, on some bit. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, right here. Got several of them. Just right here, for example. Yeah. Okay, and same name both sides. Yep. Not uncommon for us, right? Yep. Okay, what's next? Joel, it's a book of Joel. The first prophet we're going to bring in this thing here. So I will cover the book of Joel Wednesday night. So you can read it. Bring it down Wednesday night. Unless somebody else wants to volunteer. Tell me he's looking for volunteers to cover Joel. So I even found a couple of people that had topic before and tried to cough them until it come in here. They didn't get any volunteers. So.